On today's episode, we are going to dive into the nuance of the Roth 401k with Sean Mullaney and second-generation financial literacy through the lens of meal planning. There's a lot packed in this episode. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsource personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, we have a lot of ground to cover in this episode. First, we're going to be teeing up a conversation with Sean Mullaney, the FI Tax Guy. You can find him at fitaxguy.com. And then we're also doing, we're including a segment that we recorded with my wife, Danny, who's put together a really cool program for financial literacy and specifically focusing on the second generation FI component. How do you engage kids and get them to realize that financial literacy is life? You either know it or you don't. And if you know it, the game gets a lot easier. And so how can we make this entertaining and engaging? It's going to be a fantastic show. Can't wait to tee it up. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan. I am doing quite well. Yeah, what's going on in your world?
Well, I tell you, in the Mendoza household, in this kind of, you know, lockdown state that we seem to perpetually be in, we have tried to find more fun activities to do at home. And at some point, it gets reduced to painting rocks. Now, I say that, I'm kind of thrown under the bus there. It was actually shockingly fun. My Danny, my wife, actually went out and got a painting kit with rocks as the intended target of the paint. And I was able to spend some time with my son, Zachary, actually creating really cool designs. And he was so impressed, he decided to have his dad do all the rocks. And he just watched and gave me
instructions. He supervised?
Yes, he supervised the process. So I got sucked in once again. But I found it very therapeutic. You know, I'm just coating these rocks with a pink color of my choice. And I ended up committing several hours to this endeavor.
Oh, wow. That's cool. What a nice quality time with your son, right? And I love how Danny is like the most creative person. I swear, like every time I see her Facebook feed, it's some other amazing new project she's dreamed up for the kids.
She is worth following.
And you, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think she is trying to win some sort of award without having like a dedicated Pinterest and Instagram page for all of these projects. She actually wants to do all of them. There will be no activity that shows up on Facebook or Instagram or anybody's platform that she does not try to replicate for our kids' childhood experience. And it's awesome.
That's neat. Yeah, it's funny. You talk kind of about these outdoor activities, right? And just trying to find different things to do. Right. Especially obviously this last going on almost 12 months now has been rather odd, needless to say. But, you know, we just try to do the best we can. And I think that's a lot of what we talk about here at Choose FI is you try to just find something slightly different, some way you can optimize, some way you can take a situation, look at the reality of it and make the best of it. Right. And what's cool, I actually had a kind of confluence of two different things here. So I've been listening to a new podcast called Ordinary Sherpa, which actually, you know, is our friend Heidi, who is a member of the Choose FI community. And she actually is part of your Talent Stacker podcasting group, which is neat. So she created this podcast. It's about creating little adventures in your life with your family. So that was kind of the background. I've listened to every episode she's put out and super high quality, great podcast. But so that was in the back of my mind. And then, like I think I've mentioned to you, I'm part of a mastermind group that Dominic Cortuccio, who's a great friend of the show, has put together. And he's over at doinnerwork.com. And this mastermind, this past Thursday, we had an event. And it's amazing how you can find inspiration just in little like one-off comments that you otherwise are fairly innocuous, but you never know what's going to hit you. So one of the guys was mentioning that he has a wonderful relationship with his kids, but sometimes it just feels like when he comes down, it's like, oh, dad's here. You know, it's just kind of like, oh, so big deal, dad's here. And what he was saying was he wants his kids to look back, or really to be like now, but also to look back someday and say, Dad was here. You know, Dad showed up for me. Dad was part of my life. Dad was exciting. And and that comment just really, really hit me. And I would like to think my kids are more towards the latter, but, you know, sometimes I just don't show up for them. And I was thinking of both the podcast about adventuring and this comment when Molly, my younger daughter, invited me to explore. We have this little creek out back of our house, and you know, they kind of wade in it and they play around and jump on the rocks and whatnot. But her and her friend Sophie asked me to explore with them. And it's funny, Jonathan, because my initial response was my age-old, sure, I'll play for 5 minutes and then I'll go in and do something else, right? But you know what I did? I threw on my water shoes.
Oh, that's commitment.
Right? Yeah. Threw on the water shoes, bundled up because, you know, it's the winter. And I just said, sure, let's do it. And you know what we did? We explored the creek to the end. Wow. Of the creek.
You found the end.
We found the end. And it was really cool. And you know what? The very next day, they invited me again to do it. And we just had hours of fun. And you know what? It was just that thought of, it's so easy to just kind of, I don't know, sleepwalk, right? Or just show up like, sure, Dad's here. But what would it look like if you, Jonathan, you, the listener, showed up to everything in your life with, I want to be here. That hit me like a bolt of lightning. And I hope this continues. I expect this to continue. But man, that is just a pretty cool North Star, you know?
You know, the way to start with being here, especially in that activity, I bet you didn't have your cell phone in your back pocket. I bet you it got left inside. That is probably the single thing that you can do to infer commitment. Because how does it, it rips the experience out when you're halfway into it and you get that one notification. You say, well, real quick, let me just pause this and do this. And then you get sucked into a new infinite scroll. Yeah, that's awesome, man. I tell you what, if you guys want to have like some really cool custom painted rocks to just slide into the creek bed in various places, it'll spice it up. I happen to know a really cool production facility for those.
That would be a cool scavenger hunt. That could definitely work for the next adventure.
We need this reminder though. I think that's kind of the cadence of the show. We need this reminder because it's really hard to be focusing on growth in all areas of your life at the same time. So I think what my goal has been is to hit some level of minimum viable or steady state that I'm comfortable in and then try to maintain that, which is different than like an all-in focus on this that sucks up all the bandwidth everywhere else. Rather, you get to some sort of level of autopilot that you recognize is moving you forward, but isn't all-consuming, and then you move on to the next aspect. And it's kind of like a wheel of life, I guess, is one way of looking at it, and it's made up of these different spokes, these different aspects. And at some point, it's time to go back and readdress because something's going to lapse, whether it be your relationships, your health, your fitness, your business, your skills that you're building, you know, these sorts of things. There are these different aspects and there are different seasons that I think you're going to be able to find more time to lean into one or the other. And I think just figuring out how do we get a baseline in all of them that we're comfortable with and then recognizing, all right, when is it time to go around the wheel and make sure that we're really keeping balance here. I think it's easy for us in the Excel nerd spreadsheet space to just get so locked in on the numbers. What's our savings rate this month? What's our financial target? And that's great. But the goal here would be for you to spend a little bit of time here, get that locked down, and then take the bandwidth that afforded you and apply that to the next aspect, and then so on and so forth. Then at some point, yes, you might realize that by incremental improvements, all these various aspects of your life, now you're back to finances and you can actually do more than you were able to do the last time you were really focusing on it. And you're able to do more with less effort because you don't have to build that foundation up anymore. That's the circular aspect of this thing. Brad, it's really cool to see. You know, right now, I don't think you figure your finances are a huge point of concern. It's not something that you're needing to troubleshoot. It's a 10, 15, 20 minutes a month type situation for you. And that time is now focusing on other aspects. And I remember even a couple months ago, 3 months ago, that focus was absolutely fitness for a period of time. This was it. This was the one thing. And it's not to say that you're not focused on fitness, but you have shifted into the next spoke, right? You're focusing on the next aspect to this wheel. Does that resonate with you? Does that feel, and if so, what season of life are you in right now?
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good explanation. And to your point, you focus on one of those spokes. And I like that way of describing it. And maybe you put a little extra time, effort, and focus on that. And then at least the way that my life works, I just kind of do get to that steady state where I feel good. And then I can move on to another focus. And, you know, that doesn't mean you can't come back to certain things or you don't backslide, right? Like, you know, we talk about, obviously, this is a financial independence show. While I feel like my finances are really in great shape, there are still things that I kind of backslide on. Like even just this very week, I realized that I had signed up for Netflix a couple of months ago and I hadn't canceled the thing. So I literally just canceled that. And my wife and I think I told you, we had been watching the show Billions on Hulu. We watched it through Showtime and we realized like we just simply were not watching it and we were wasting $10 a month. So is $10 a month going to make or break me? No, clearly it isn't. But I wasn't using the thing and I couldn't justify it. So that was in one 20-minute span, I canceled both of those things. And that was just because I was sleepwalking, right? And sure, this isn't my time to focus on finances because everything really is on autopilot. But you can always go back to it. And I think it's important that you do get to that state where you're comfortable, but realize that every aspect of your life, you cannot just take it for granted. So, yeah, I mean, I guess to answer your question, I would say I'm definitely, fitness is certainly still something that I'm focusing on, though you're right, probably not as much as I was 3 months ago. I've kind of found something that works for me. But yeah, I mean, I think just relationships now. I think obviously we've had a lot of family time and it's been wonderful, but you know, just like always, if I ask myself, honestly, like, am I showing up as the best version of myself for my wife and my kids every day? The answer is probably no. You know, and I mean, can I be more present? Can I be there? Can I engage more? Can I do more fun things proactively instead of, you know, my wife is a great planner. You know, Laura is fantastic. She's always coming up with fun things, but maybe that's made me just defer a little bit more, you know, and not show up and say like, hey, let's do this today. This would be awesome. What would it look like if I showed up a little bit more like that? So I think that's kind of the area that I'm focusing on right now, I would say.
Okay. You know, let's add a little balance. Everybody spend some time figuring out what, you know, aspect of the spokes of the wheel you're focusing on right now. And is there balance in your life? And for those of you that are really focused on your finances at the moment and tax optimization, we have a fantastic segment teed up for you. So with that, we're going to have a conversation with Sean Mullaney, the FI Tax Guy, about who should be very excited about the possibility of leaning into and leveraging their Roth, specifically Roth 401k. All right, guys, we're picking up with our FI Tax Guy segment here. Sean joins us on the show every several weeks, every couple months to just break down a topic and do a deep dive into something, and it just benefits the entire community. So recently, within the last month or so, we did one on the Roth IRA and how it might serve as potentially an emergency fund, and comparing and contrasting that with the backdoor Roth and how that might fit into it. But we're going to come back to the Roth conversation because increasingly the Roth 401k is becoming common enough and people are having questions about it. And you guys know historically, Brad and I have leaned really heavily on the 401k. Let's control what we can control. Let's control our tax rate. We assume that we're going to be making a higher marginal tax rate now, probably less in the future. Let's pay that tax bill when we can control what our income is. That was the play. But Sean is going to make the case. This is increasingly common. There's some nuance here. It's worth discussing. So with that, Sean Mullaney, the FI Tax Guy, welcome back to Choose a FI.
Thanks so much, Jonathan and Brad. Pleasure to be here today.
So Sean, Roth 401ks, I remember when they were kind of an anomaly, but increasingly it seems like it's an option that you have. You're presented with your 401k or your Roth 401k, and there's some nuance for the FI community. Give us a sense for what this decision tree might look like and the pros and cons of each.
Yeah, absolutely, Jonathan. So Roth 401k works very similar to a traditional 401k, right? It's subject to a $19,500 annual limit. For most folks, $26,000 now for 50 and older. And what it is instead of the traditional 401k where you take the deduction up front and then you'll pay the tax later on, what you do is you say, all right, I don't want a tax deduction today. So the money I put in there is taxable today when I earn it at work, right? It goes into this Roth 401k. And if I play my cards right, it will come out later on tax and penalty free, right? Tax-free growth. Now, if you're doing the very early retirement strategy and you're saying, hey, I'm in the 24% marginal bracket today or 32% marginal bracket today, so I'm paying a lot of federal tax, and then later on I won't, probably the Roth 401k is not really your game, right? You probably should just take the 19.5 of traditional 401k deductions and then, you know, do Roth conversion ladders and similar planning when you're early retired and you're paying a low tax, right? But let's say, here's a couple of fact patterns, right? One might be, hey, I recently graduated from college and I started my job in September. And so I'm going to have 4 months worth of income, right? Well, you're not going to find yourself in a very high tax bracket that year, right? You're just not going to have enough time to make enough money so that you're in a high tax bracket. So you might be in the 10% federal tax bracket. Why commit to contributing to a traditional 401k and locking in a 10% tax bracket on getting a 10% deduction? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because in the future, there's a substantial risk that even in an early retirement, and maybe you're not going to do an early retirement, you're going to pay federal taxes at a much higher bracket. So why deduct today at 10% to then re-include it in income later on at 20, 30%? Who knows what brackets are going to be? Also, not everybody is looking to early retire. And it may be the case that you're at historically low tax brackets today. So for example, maybe you're in the 24% tax bracket today, and you think you're going to work for a long time and retirement is going to be in your 60s or 70s. It may be that once you get to retirement and you're looking at Social Security income, you're looking at dividend and interest income, you're looking at traditional retirement account income, and future tax rates might go up, it may be that, guess what, you're going to pay more tax in retirement than you will in your working years. That can happen. We don't know what tax rates are going to be in the future. So that person who's steadily in the 24% bracket today might want to do a Roth 401k instead of a traditional IRA to give them some sort of tax insurance, some sort of tax, hedging against future tax rate increases. And then the last thing I'll say, Jonathan, is you don't have to do all of Roth or all of traditional. If your 401k plan offers the Roth, you can split the difference. You could do $13,000 in a traditional and $6,500 in a Roth. You could do $10,000 in a Roth and $9,500 in a traditional. Any combination you can imagine, you could basically do within that upper limit of the $19,500.
Sean, I'm curious. I guess when I'm hearing this kind of decision point between the Roth and the traditional, a lot of it sounds like forecasting future tax rates.
Yes.
And that feels almost akin to like timing the market to me. If something like, I don't have the knowledge, you can look at and try to read the tea leaves, but we don't ultimately know, which is why I loved your point about hedging and flexibility and having some amount in Roth, some in traditional. But can you dive a little deeper into that? Like, is it really just coming down to forecasting future tax rates? If we knew for a metaphysical certainty that the tax rate was going to be the same now and 30 years from now, would you pick one or the other? Is there like talk me through how you would think of that as a thought experiment?
Brad, I would look at two things, right? One is this tax rate situation, and they are speculative, but I like to think about some of the extreme cases, right? Like, the very early retirement where you're working in the tech industry and you're at the 35% bracket today, and you're going to retire early and have low tax brackets, right? That's one extreme. My recent graduate from college or med school or law school, that's another extreme where we're going to be artificially low for a year or two, and then we're going to go up, right? That's another extreme. But in the middle, there's a lot of play in the joints. And so, yes, one is the tax bracket arbitrage, and it's very speculative, and there is a nice insurance component to the Roth piece that should factor in there. But then the second piece is the growth piece. And I love the idea of bailing out money from traditional accounts before it grows. So all things being equal, including tax bracket, I would sort of lean towards the Roth account, because I like the idea of, all right, I'm going to lock in my tax rate today. I'm going to lock in, hey, I'm going to pay tax on these earnings, and that stinks, but I'll pay that tax. And then 30, 40 years from now, all that growth will be tax-free. And, there's different ways of thinking about it. Mathematically, if growth equaled inflation, then this conversation is irrelevant, right? If my growth is equal to my inflation, it just doesn't matter. I do a Roth, I do a traditional, who cares? I'm hoping my growth is going to be substantially in excess of inflation. And now I like the idea of, hey, I've bailed out those earnings and I never paid tax on them. So that's sort of how I would approach it. It's a tax rate play. It's also a growth play.
When you're talking about these individuals that are in the middle here, and they're listening to this show and they've kind of locked on a different tactics, I think it's important just to think about the implications of one of these vehicles versus the other. So for instance, individuals, whether or not they're ready for it or now, they probably have earmarked, when I'm ready for it, let me go do some homework on how the Roth conversion ladder might come into play in all of this. And so they've made some notes to go back and do some research on that. Or maybe they've heard us talk about capital gains harvesting and what this strategy might look like. And they kind of understand when they do the research that some of the conversation, the groundwork we laid is a certain amount of money in a 401k or a certain amount of money in taxable accounts. If now we're putting all of this focus suddenly on this Roth 401k, how does that change the scenario, if at all? You know, like individuals before 59 and a half that are trying to access this money early, they see this pathway to take advantage of getting the money out of the 401k, letting it season inside of a Roth IRA, and then you don't pay taxes on it when it goes in, you let it season and potentially you don't pay taxes on it when it comes out. And then also when they're looking at capital gains harvesting, they kind of have in their mind, they're anchored to like this 15% federal tax rate on gains up to a certain amount. So like both of those are in play and they are all using these pieces that we're familiar with, the 401k. When we introduce Roth 401k, does that just nuke everything? Are there slight adjustments? Do they become unavailable? Talk us through how it changes the scenario.
So I certainly don't think it nukes everything. And I think it depends on your situation, right? So the very early retirees in the audience, right? So you're 35, you're working for a tech company, you're making a ton of money, and you're going to retire in your 40s. I don't think the Roth 401k plays much of a role in that. But I think there's a whole lot more people in the audience who are like, look, you know, I want to retire and I'm not going to be governed by what society tells me. I'm not going to be governed by 65, but it might be 61. It might be 59. I'm just not entirely sure. And I would like some runway when I do early retire. So let's talk about that for a second, right? So if you early retire at, say, age 60,
and I just want to point out, I'm going to let you keep going, but I want to point out you're picking the number that is on the other side of that 59 and a half kind of penalty marker, right? You're saying if you're, sure, if you're kind of keeping in mind what the IRS guidelines are, you're not trying to get anything early, then scenario that you're about to lay out.
Yeah, I'm going to lay out a scenario where you're 60 years old, you retire early, and your only asset is a large 401k, just broad strokes, right? Well, guess what? Every dollar you withdraw is now going to be subject to tax. And we don't know what the future tax rates are going to be. We hope they're going to be, you know, relatively low like they are today. But you do have to remember we are at historic low federal income tax rates. So we don't know what they're going to be, right? So every time you want to get a can of Coke for a dollar, well, you got to take out more than a dollar because every withdrawal is going to be taxable. Well, what about a Roth 401k, right? You can put some money in there and then you leave your employer. And you can access a bunch of that money if you do it right. I actually did a recent blog post on this, Roth 401k withdrawals. They don't work the same way as Roth IRA withdrawals. So that's an important point for the audience. But you can structure it such that you're able to recover tax-free contributions from a Roth 401k. Generally speaking, you may have to use a rollover into a Roth IRA. My blog post goes into detail on that. The other strategy, of course, is just waiting to your age 59 and a half, and you've had the account for 5 years. But you know, regardless, what this is doing is it's giving you a way to access money in your retirement that you won't have to pay tax on, right? So I think it's not necessarily about nuking conventional financial independence strategies. I think it's about broadening it, right? Because I think 5 years ago, when people were thinking about tax and financial independence, a lot of it was around the super early retiree crowd, right? And that's great. And that's an important piece of the FI community. But I think there's a much larger piece out there that's saying, well, I'm not going to retire at age 42, but I don't want to work to age 70 either. And so there's some strategies we could use to have a little more optionality, a little more flexibility. And I think that's where the Roth 401k comes into play, right? Where you're not necessarily going to do an early retirement, but you're not going to work to age 70. That's where it's a great indicator that maybe a Roth 401k is something you should consider. And then the other point I had made earlier is about those years where you have artificially low income where you're in the workforce. That's often like graduating from law school, med school, graduating from college. You're making money, you're in the workforce, but your income for a year or two is just artificially low.
So I want to chase that one down a little bit. And I feel like one thing I heard you say in there is that the Roth 401k, if you understand the rules, a la you read your blog article, you do a little bit of research, there is a way to access that money ahead of 59 and a half or 60 without penalty via a mechanism similar to a rollover that we've seen in other scenarios. It sounds like you're using your Roth IRA as a portion of that. And we don't need to break it all down in its entirety, but I just wanted to clarify. You're saying with some strategy, you can access money, contributions put in your Roth 401k without penalty ahead of 59 and a half. Was that accurate?
That's exactly right, Jonathan. So the default rule, if you're not 59 and a half, is they call it the cream in the coffee rule. A well-known practitioner, Ed Slott, I believe, came up with that moniker years ago. And what it says is, let's say I have a Roth 401k and I put $100,000 in contributions into it over, you know, many years. And now it's worth, let's just say $150,000, right? $100,000 of contributions, $150,000 of total value, so $50,000 of earnings. With a Roth IRA, right, you could just take out money up to $100,000 of contributions, no problem. But let's say I'm not 59 and a half and I take the money directly as a withdrawal from my Roth 401k. Now I have a little bit of a problem because the, you know, two-thirds of that withdrawal. So let's just say I take $1,000 out, right? It's worth $150. I just take $1,000. And the first two-thirds, $667, tax and penalty free, no problem. But the earnings are ratably included in that withdrawal. So $333 is subject to ordinary income tax and a penalty. So that's not a good outcome. And that's different from a Roth IRA. So on my blog post, I talk about, hey, that's not that great of an outcome. Is there a way we could get around that? And one of the primary ways to get around that is to first roll over your Roth 401k into a regular Roth IRA. Okay. And you could do that at a Vanguard, Fidelity, Schwab, other brokerages, right? These financial institutions are very used to, hey, I've got a Roth 401k or I have a traditional IRA. Can you roll it over direct trustee to trustee transfer? Right? They're used to working with you through those sorts of situations. So now I roll over my $150,000 Roth 401k into a Roth IRA. The way it works is the first $100,000, my old historic contributions, they go in as Roth IRA contributions. And then the next $50,000, the earnings go in as Roth IRA earnings. What's cool about that is out of a Roth IRA, I could take those $100,000 of contributions out tax and penalty free before I dip into the $50,000 of taxable earnings. So that's why we like, in many cases, and you know, your situation may vary, you got to talk to your advisor, but in many cases, if you're not 59 and a half, it makes sense. If you need to access that Roth 401k money, roll it into a Roth IRA first.
Sean, that is fascinating. So we often get the question of, hey, I have a 401k at an old job. I left the job. What do I do with it? And I would be curious in hearing your advice, but I think most people just say, oh, kind of usually look at the options. There might be a scenario where your old company, you just leave it there because they have incredible options. The expense ratios are ultra low. Like that's actually my particular scenario, to be honest. And I've left, even though I haven't been at that company in 5+ years, my 401k is still with them. But you know, there's also counterpoints clearly, and we can we could go into that obviously. But it usually just comes down to that from what I've heard. Whereas what you're saying with this Roth 401k is that there are substantive reasons to roll them out of the company Roth 401k to your own Roth IRA. So I guess first, am I hearing you right? And second, are there other considerations for both of these? You know, I've set you up now for both traditional and Roth.
Yes. And the answer is, Brad, it is a multivariable calculus. So there's several questions you should ask. The first one is employer stock. If you have old employer stock in your traditional 401k, and it's grown a lot. There's something out there in the tax world, and I don't want to send people down a rabbit hole. I'll say a term. It's called net unrealized appreciation. There can be a tax planning play there. So you do not want to roll that into a traditional IRA from a traditional 401k without at least first considering this net unrealized appreciation tax planning strategy. And that usually requires the assistance of a professional, right? That is not a do-it-yourself tactic, right? So that's one thing. The second thing is the so-called backdoor Roth IRA. If you want to do a backdoor Roth IRA because you make too much to contribute to a regular Roth IRA, rolling your old employer 401k into a traditional IRA is not a good idea, right? So that's another consideration. You alluded to fees. Absolutely, fees and investment choice. That's a huge consideration. 10, 15 years ago, a lot of 401k plans were not that good in investment choice and fees. That's changing, right? Employers have gotten smarter about this and have used their power to get better investment choices and lower fees. So it may be, hey, you know what? These are good investment choices. These are low fees. Why do I need to pick up the phone and do a rollover, right? That just doesn't make any sense. I'm perfectly happy here. So those are some of the considerations you would want to make. On the Roth 401k side, those considerations generally apply as well. But then I'll add a couple more, right? One is withdrawal strategy, which we've talked about. I can't just take that money before age 59 and a half without having some tax and penalty, right? So you might want to go into a Roth IRA for tax and penalty reasons. And then the second issue is these so-called required minimum distributions. So general rule is all retirement accounts have required minimum distributions once you turn age 72. There's an exception to the general rule, and that's a Roth IRA. So you can have that Roth IRA sitting there and you're 72, 73, 74, 104, no required minimum distributions. If you have a Roth 401k, you do have required minimum distributions. Why don't you like those required minimum distributions? Well, they're not taxable out of a Roth, right? So if you have a Roth 401k and you're 73 years old, you have to take an RMD, no questions asked. Not taxable to you. So why are you, you might be saying, well, why do I care? Well, you want to keep that money in growing tax-free as long as possible for both you and your heirs, right? So, you know, if everything else is equal and you're about to turn 72, generally speaking, I'm going to recommend you roll from your Roth 401k to your Roth IRA just so you can avoid RMDs and keep that money growing tax and penalty. Well, it's already penalty-free, but tax-free as long as possible.
Are there any like timing clauses on when you can initiate this rollover for your Roth 401k? Is it a separation of service clause? Is it just at a whim you want to do this? Is there any like events that precipitate your ability to do this rollover?
In most cases, Jonathan, you would need a separation of service in order to do a rollover from a Roth 401k to a Roth IRA. I myself am not a plans expert, and so I don't want to say in all cases. Where you can find that out for your particular plan is you can go on your benefits portal at work and, you know, search in their little search box 401k summary plan description. Sometimes it's initialized SPD. What that will have is a whole section on withdrawals and when you can take a withdrawal. And generally speaking, a full withdrawal in most plans that I've seen, it's not going to be allowable until you separate from service. They're going to have different provisions for, hey, you could do an in-service withdrawal of a limited amount or for hardship reasons, things like that. So it is certainly possible, but it's usually going to be, Jonathan, hey, if I want a rollover of the entire balance, it's usually going to require some sort of separation from service.
Sean, that's really, really helpful. So yeah, whereas with a traditional 401k, there's some decisions at the margins to roll it into a traditional IRA, whereas with, as you're describing with this Roth 401k, there are at least two significant reasons. If you roll it into the Roth IRA, you are not subject to the RMDs, and you also then have the ability with some additional nuance, as you describe, to access the contributions much more readily than if it was sitting in the Roth 401k. So yeah, as I'm hearing it, there is a really, really significant case to be made if you do separate that you should roll this from your Roth 401k to your Roth IRA.
Yeah, and Brad, let me just make one last point on that. Like I said at the beginning, it's a multivariable calculus. I'll add one more consideration, which is creditor protection. And the reason I add that is 401k plans, they're subject to this law called ERISA. And so generally speaking, your creditors, other than an ex-spouse or the IRS, cannot access them. So people love to have money in 401ks and Roth 401ks. IRA creditor protection varies very much state to state. There's, you know, we could do a whole essay, a whole book on that. We don't have time to do that today. In some states, the creditor protection is fabulous. In other states, it's a little more limited. So you're going to want to consider that before doing any sort of rollover out of a 401k Roth or traditional to a Roth or traditional IRA.
So, you know, as I'm kind of simmering in this along with our audience, it strikes me that if we decide to embrace this tactic and go this Roth 401k, I think many of us with the regular 401k that we've talked about ever so often on the show, what it says is we'll figure it out a little bit later. Like, we have so many options, so many different ways that we can tackle this, you know, this project of early retirement, and we can optimize our, you know, our tax strategy around that. Whereas when we really lean in 100% to the Roth 401k, we're basically saying, I just want to keep it super simple. I'm looking at my tax rate now. I understand it. It seems okay. I'm just going to lock in the tax rate that I'm in. And for the early retiree, it would lend itself to almost like a two-fund or a two-phase retirement strategy. So we're going to build up the excess in our taxable accounts, and we're going to live on that up until pretty close to our retirement age, whether or not that be on either side of 59 and a half. We've talked about a strategy when we leave our job, whenever we leave, whether it's 50, 57, 56, 52, if we leave it ahead of time, then we could use the strategy that you laid out, take advantage of separation of service, move that over into our Roth IRA if desired, and we could access those funds ahead of time. Or we could just live off our taxable right up until the 59 and a half, the other side of that, and then we have access to this funds without a penalty. So we don't need to do anything. It's just very, very simple. And then it's just, how do you feel about your current tax rate? And how do you feel, like, how much energy do you want to put into really optimizing this down? We're basically removing that, saying we're just going to do the Roth 401k. We'll make it work. Is that kind of where you fall on this as well? Is there anything else? You said it's, you know, multivariable. Is that kind of, you're just keeping it simple, and there's some advantages along the way for the person that chooses to go this path?
Yeah, I think this is one of those tactics that everyone in the FI community should be aware of. And it's not something to obsess over. It's not something to rewrite your plan over. But especially if you're in one of those marginal cases where you're not going to retire super early, this should at least be a consideration if your workplace offers it.
Huge thanks to Sean for coming on the show and sharing this with our audience. It is really interesting when you look back over the last 6 years, how much information bloggers and content producers in this financial independence space have produced, and how little time and focus has been put on the Roth 401k. And I know for a fact there are individuals in the audience that have said, I feel like the math makes me want to do Roth 401k, but I don't hear anybody talking about it. Like, I don't know. Am I missing something? What's the downside? Hopefully this definitively answered that for you, and definitely go to Sean's website for more information at fitaxguide.com.
Hey, this is Andrew from the Choose a Fi team. Hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to get right back to it after these quick messages.
Now, next, Brad, I'm going to hand this over to you. We have an awesome conversation, and you had a fantastic conversation with my wife, Dani, talking about meal planning and using meal planning as a financial literacy tool for second-generation FI.
Yeah, this was great. And it's amazing what the whole team is putting together at the Choose a FI Foundation. And Dani is one of the curriculum leads there for the elementary school. And they're not just resting on their laurels, right? They're not just trying to optimize at the margins with the curriculum they've put together, but they're trying to find things that are going to leverage people's interests, right? And what are the ways that we can get children interested in thinking about decision-making, thinking about personal finance, and really being involved with the family, right? We talk about second-generation FI all the time here. And a lot of us are looking for ways to get our kids interested. And I think Dani and the entire team put together something great with this meal planning made easy. And yeah, fun conversation. So yeah, let's definitely get into it. All right. So we have an update here with the Choose a FI Foundation. So we're lucky enough to have Dani Mendonca, who is the co-curriculum developer. And Dani actually primarily focuses on the elementary school level. So what's cool is we have some new things going on here, and I'm excited, Dani, to welcome you back. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. It's good to change hats and be on a Friday in a different way.
Yeah, this should be fun. So I guess just for anyone who is new to the podcast, just give us like a real quick overview of, you know, who you are and what's going on at the Choose a Fi Foundation from a macro level.
Hi. So as Brad said, I'm Danny Mendonza, and I do wear the other half. I am Jonathan's wife, but I wear more hats than that. I am a part of the Choose a Fi International Foundation, and I am the co-curriculum developer for the elementary school curriculum. So I've had a lot of fun doing that. But what we're focusing on today is the meal plan. And that's kind of exciting, bringing not just my passion for teaching and education to the field, but also overlapping financial literacy concepts that we very much need in our society.
Yeah, agreed. And I think this is one of the cool things that you and the team are doing at the foundation is trying to make financial literacy something that people can understand in their real lives and like finding ways to make it applicable as opposed to just, like we say at the podcast, right? As opposed to it just being the nuts and bolts of money, which frankly is really boring for adults, not less for kids. So just finding these real world applications. So again, just kind of taking a quick step back. So choosefifoundation.org is where people can find all the resources that we have just from the foundation generally. We have the free FI 101 course, and you and Mandy and Rob and the team have been working on the pre-K through 12 financial literacy curriculum for really, it's more than, it's probably 2.5 years at this point. And that is a remarkable, remarkable thing that you've put together. And what we're going to talk about today is a way that you're kind of augmenting this financial literacy education, which it seems like you guys have hit on meal planning as a very specific way to get kids interested in not only finance, but decision making and really getting involved in the family planning of, hey, what is this going to look like? What goes into mom and dad putting the meals on my plate every day, 365 days a year? So tell me the genesis for that and talk us through what's going on.
Absolutely. So I'm not going to claim this as my brainchild. Rob Phelan, who wears the high school hat, definitely came up with the meal planning project. And I say project because it is in conjunction with our curriculum. And we talk through a lot of financial literacy concepts that this project allows kids to then pick up in a real world context. So we're putting them outside, you know, we're teaching them in the classroom all of these concepts, unit pricing, price comparison, how to budget. And now we're then saying to them, okay, go out in a real world setting where you can interact with these concepts. And the reason why we do that is we want financial literacy concepts to be more than just habits. If they're just habits, they flake away and they adjust and they change. We want kids to realize that these are important and also take the ownership and have ownership themselves and have fun doing it. So this meal planning project is a project that did start in high school. We've actually adapted it to fit all three grade levels. And then we right now have a third through fifth grade video series. So it's a meal planning video series. And the fun thing about this is I, the teacher, actually teach the kids the meal planning project. So I get on and for a 20-minute video, it is supposed to take 45 to 60 minutes, an hour time frame. I go ahead and talk them through meal planning. And, you know, what better way to do it than with an item? You know, meal planning is one of those top three items that falls on everyone's budget. So it's real world and it's something that your parents are doing anyway. So these kids are seeing their parents' meal plan. So why not get engaged and involved in the conversation? Especially in the current situation in the pandemic, they're seeing it, they're living it out in front of their kids. And so it's a wonderful way to talk about financial literacy concepts and bring them home to the child and also grab them and grab their passion while they're doing it.
I love that. That concept of, right, the big three. And we talk about this really often at ChooseFi. And it's really your home, your living expenses, rent, mortgage, whatever it may be, right? Your automobiles or transportation, and then your food. I mean, those are really the three big ones. And, you know, frankly, our decisions for cars and for our living situation, those are not things that you're making those decisions more than a couple times a decade or maybe a couple times in an adult lifetime. But that third leg of the stool, like you said, this meals, I mean, this is going on. These decisions are happening every single day. So I think it's brilliant to bring the kids in, not on some random tangential decision, but something that is really critical to what's going on in the family. And so I think that was a really good strategy for sure. And I'm curious, so I guess my question at this point is, who is this geared towards specifically? I think you said that it's for all three grade sections. And I think you're saying elementary, middle, and high in that regard. But is it geared towards anyone specifically? And I guess the follow-up to that is, can anyone sign up? Do they need to be doing the curriculum that we already have set up? Can this be like a one-off project? Talk us through what's going on with that.
So Brad, I'm so glad you asked, because there are a number of different audiences that this particular project helps and is directed to. It's not just a kid lens. It's also for families. It is also for educators, and it can be for grandparents. So it's everyone, and homeschoolers. So basically what this project does in a third through fifth grade setting, children are tasked with the project of going into a grocery store themselves, either in person or in a virtual setting. They are told that they have to meal plan, and they have one day that they have to take care of. They have to do the meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they are told to go ahead and meal plan from the very beginning. So there are four parts to this project. Number one, they actually have to go and look up the recipes themselves. They have to research it. What that does for a child is encourages them to explore the grocery store, either in person or in a virtual setting. And on my third through fifth grade video, which is for free, this video does talk them through how to do it. I actually hop on to the virtual platform and talk them through how to look at different products. I talk them through unit pricing, how to compare, why that's important. But what I also then do is task them with the opportunity to go on their own and have some fun doing it. Because what you realize, even in the financial setting, is that kids need to make mistakes in order to learn. They need to be involved in this project themselves and be able to make mistakes. And if they're making them in the third through fifth grade setting, they are going to be growing exponentially. But this isn't just for students. This video series that I speak of, this meal plan made easy, how to for kids, walks them through everything they will need. The toolkit is there with all of the resources. The lesson format has additional notes that they can then review. When I talk them through this video, I provide places for them to stop, analyze, reflect, think. I encourage them to brainstorm. We watch videos, we come back, we explore the site. So it's interactive, it's flexible. And I say flexible because I know parents are juggling so much right now. And so when you get asked to pick something else up, you kind of get nervous. And I don't want you to be nervous, because there is so much in this project that you can pick up and use and adapt to fit your family where you are right now. This meal planning project is open for all sorts of budgets. You do not have to go to one set store in order to go ahead and meal plan. You can shop at any store. In the middle school, we do a great job of showing kids how to budget, we provide resources, how to actually go into the dollar store and get items at the dollar store and do the budgeting and adapt this meal planning project to fit every socioeconomic student, teacher, or setting. And that's what I love about this, is it's real world.
Yeah, that's great. It's so adaptable for everyone, right? And it can be more complex as the children get older. You could do one day of meal planning for elementary kids. And I think that what you've done for the high school kids is it's up to an entire week. So they have to plan 21 meals, right? An entire week's worth of meals for their family.
Absolutely. The fun part for a parent is if you have multiple children and they are on different levels, this project can fit your whole family. So you can be having a third through fifth grader with someone who's in middle school, and you might have someone who's in high school by this stage. And you can all be doing the meal planning project, and it's adaptable and it fits where they are on the level. So in middle school, the third through fifth grade meal planning series grows. And instead of it being for one day, they now have it for three. But obviously, they are a different type of kid, right? So they have different experiences, different skill sets that they bring to it. And they are developmentally older. And so as a result, it's wider and deeper. And that is the same with high school. By the time you get to high school and you're having these conversations, we're now encouraging those same children to have conversations and look at their pantry before going to the store. And they are now looking at recipes that are going to help them on a budgeting side of things. So it's going to bring their cost. They're thinking about cost. What have they already got in their pantry? What have they already got at home? And they're adapting and tweaking. And that's real world. That's what we're seeing parents having to do. And they see their parents doing it. And so they're engaged and excited and are living it with their parents. And no better way to live it with your parents when you're doing something that you're both excited about. We all need to eat. It's a driving factor, right?
Yeah, just slightly important, right? Yeah, I love this concept. we're always talking about second generation FI, right? And how do you get these ideas through to your kids or your grandkids or whomever may be in your life, right? And I think a lot of us would love to somehow transmit this love for FI, this love for intentionality to this second generation. And a lot of us just wonder, like, how do we do that? And I think for me, it's always been about normalizing it. It's about normalizing these conversations as opposed to making it, oh, that's for mom and dad. You don't need to be bothered. Or, oh, you're not old enough for this, right? Like, actually normalizing and making it age appropriate, right? There are certain items that we're not going to talk about with our, in my case, my third grader and my seventh grader, but there are a whole heck of a lot of things that we do introduce to them and they're interested. And I think that's really, really very cool. So for me, this looks like you're building it in some fun into it. You're obviously building this decision-making. That's the critical piece, is learning how to think about this as a background and learning how to think about it without this being boring, without this being just another, oh, mom and dad gave me an assignment on top of my school, right? Like if you can bring some fun into this, they're going to actually want to do it as opposed to it feeling like just another thing they have to do, right?
Exactly. There's so much that we have to do in our society anyway. And so it's really great to find something that's natural. And that's what we do hit home, all of us, Mandy, Rob, myself, is trying to find ways that are natural to have good conversations with your kids. I mean, there are other ways that we do this through our curriculum. Media Club comes to mind that you would also be able to look in. Lots of great ways to have natural conversations with your kids, because when you are encouraging them to have it and ask good questions, it's more than just a skill set that involves financial literacy concepts. It's a real world skill that you need them to have. So it evolves with them as they grow. And that's exciting for me as a parent, but also as an educator.
Yeah, and I can speak as a parent. I know you had sent me a couple of videos in the financial literacy side of what you guys are creating. And I had Molly get started on it. And she just loved the videos. I mean, they're really, really engaging. They're interesting. Like she wound up just going to the computer on her own volition to do lesson number two and do lesson number three. It was very, very cool. So, I mean, that is a testament to you, Manny and Rob and the entire team there at what you're putting together. This is not boring stuff. This is not a drag on their free time. This is something that I know, speaking for my own daughter, like she learned about SMART goals and how to set goals. And she actually then sat down and ran me through the exercise, which was just so much fun, like to actually set very specific goals. So what you guys are doing, it's working. And that is just, it's just so cool to see all the immense amount of work you and the team have put in, like coming to fruition here in real life. And so a huge thank you from me as a parent, but obviously also from the Choose a Vi side and our entire community. I mean, this is producing something that is really remarkable.
Well, thank you. Incredibly humbled by your words, but also just a reminder that I'm a parent too. And so this is not just important to me from an educator standpoint, but also from wearing the parent hat. And I just see so many wonderful conversations that you can have with your kids. And that makes me smile, because in the video series, I encourage kids to go and have those conversations with your parents. So often we are asked by parents and educators how to have these conversations with their kids. And we always go back to it's natural. Wherever you can do it in your day that's natural, you're going to get your kids to buy into the content. And so it makes me smile that Molly went ahead and was encouraged to actually talk you through it, and that she was passionate about it enough to ask you to do, did you know that there was such an acronym? How did you explore it, Dad? So that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. It was so much fun. And to see that passion and excitement in her, it was really, really cool. So Danny, we've talked about a lot of resources, and I want to make it clear to everybody listening where they can find everything generally, but also very specifically what we're talking about. I know you guys try to make it really simple to find, but from a macro level, if anybody goes to choosefifoundation.org, they can find all of the information that is available from our foundation. So it should be very clear what all is there. You sign up and all, you know, everything that we've talked about, all this is free. So you can find all of it. And it's important to note that this is not just for somebody following this curriculum in a classroom. Like you don't need to be an educator. You can be, like you said, a grandparent, a parent, even just an older sibling, right? If you want to introduce this, you can pick and choose lessons. It's all there. It's a smorgasbord, right? Like you can pick and choose. If you find, hey, they have an hour, let's find something that's interested for my child and let's see where it goes from there, right? Maybe they wind up taking the entire curriculum and that's wonderful. But even just picking and choosing a couple of different lessons here and there can be incredibly valuable in just seeding that the concepts, right? And making them interested in wanting to learn more. So I guess that's the real high level. And then if people are looking very specifically for this third through fifth grade meal planning, as I understand it, we set up a short code. It's choosefi.com/meal plan. And that'll take you directly to the sign up for that third through fifth. And now, obviously, Danny, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm assuming if somebody has a second grader or a sixth grader, like this is not exclusive to third through fifth, right? You know, plus or minus.
Absolutely. And it's also something that we're looking for feedback from and then continue to evolve and provide more resources for you. So that communication is so important to us so that we can provide you and the community with what you need right now. So absolutely. But also, you know, I have a little three-year-old at home. He's only three and he still stands up and has conversations with me in the kitchen when I'm cooking. And so not to kind of bring something else random up, but there's a knife set on Amazon that I know a lot of my friends have purchased where the blade doesn't cut the kid. I have been encouraged by lots of friends to get that set because their kids actually cut up some of the produce with them while they cook. So even though it's a third through fifth grade project and then in middle school and high school, if you've got younger kids, you can be starting to have these conversations with them. So you could look at the video, take from it what you would like, and have some of those conversations, because that's what we're trying to encourage you to do. And starting to say to them, when you go to the grocery store, oh, look at that. What does that sign mean underneath? What is that label? Well, that's a conversation that you can start having with your kid at three. What does that label mean? Because it's unit pricing. And the more they're aware that that's unit pricing, then as they get older, you can tell them what that label means. And you can start to have good conversations. You can also go ahead and do the same from store to store and let them actually be making some of the aha moments. I mean, my little boy, just three, told me he noticed the label was different in Aldi's and Kroger. And he told me that. I didn't go ahead and tell him that. And so that makes me smile because I'm laying the platform and the groundwork to encourage him to be excited about seeing things. And how often when we as parents, we're moving at a million miles an hour and we just slow down for that minute, we get so much value from the kids' lens on the world.
That is really, really brilliant. So Danny, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. This is an amazing resource you put together for the community. And just again, it's choosefifoundation.org. And if you're looking very specifically for this meal planning made easy, we set up a short link. It's just at choosefi.com/meal plan.
All right, everyone, if you're listening to this episode and this is the first episode of the Choose FI podcast that maybe you have ever listened to and you're wondering, you know, I heard you mention financial independence many times and I was recommended this podcast by a friend or family member, but I'm kind of unclear on how I get started. And the 401k conversation was a little bit, you know, farther down the road for me. It's a little bit advanced. I'm still just trying to figure out like, what are the building blocks here? Let me encourage you not to stop here. We have put together tons of free resources, and the easiest way just to get started on your own path to financial independence is just go to choosefi.com/start. choosefi.com/start. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.